each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Greetings. Once again, this is Mike Stark sitting in for Father Anthony on WNDZ. And today I have the pleasure of introducing to you, who don't know him, a wonderful priest in the Archdiocese of Chicago, Father Chuck Dom, who basically goes out and takes care of a lot of people who need his guidance and counseling. Abused women in relationships, mostly marriage, obviously. And these are people that are abused in ways other than getting beat up physically. There's a lot more to it, and we're going to dig into that, a subject that we need to become a lot more aware of in today's world. There's so much going on out there. So much is overlooked. And the person next door to you that might be the Barbie and Ken couple everybody wants to be, it might be going on unbeknownst to everybody. So Father Chuck is going to explain to us what's going on and what we need to look out for. So without further ado, Father Chuck, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
So who are you? Simply put.
Well, I'm a Dominican priest. I've worked in Chicago now for practically 50 years. I've been a priest for over 50 years. And I was the pastor of St. Pius V Parish in the Pilsen neighborhood, which is a large Mexican immigrant parish predominantly. And I started there as pastor in 1986, and I didn't really see much domestic violence myself. I have no history of it in my own family or among my friends, but I hired a pastoral counselor in the 1990s, and one day she said to me, you know, Father, almost all my clients are women, and most of them are victims of domestic violence. And I had no idea, and I knew many of those women, but I didn't see the problem. So I asked her to help me to see and recognize this problem and how to respond to it. And that took some time because I would have people who would, you know, come to me and I wouldn't see it. And she would say, you know, she's a victim of domestic violence. So I had to learn how to recognize it, discover it, and respond to it. And the more I did, the more I spoke about it in the pulpit. And the more I spoke about it, the more victims came to me. And we never did any advertising for the program, but word spread that at our parish, we were helping victims of domestic violence. So we ended up receiving a ton of people looking for help, and we had to hire more counselors. So I looked for money outside the parish because we really didn't have that kind of funding. And I found some government grants, and we hired a couple more counselors. But then the women wanted something for their children because they could see that their children were also traumatized by the abuse their mothers were experiencing. So we hired a counselor for children. And then the women wanted somebody for their husbands because they didn't want a divorce. They wanted their husbands to change. Well, we hired a counselor to work with men who want to change, not just with any court-ordered man, which is looking for a certificate to take back to the court, but somebody who actually really wants to change. So we built up a pretty large program for perpetrators interested in changing.
What percentage of the people you approached actually wanted to change? If, let's say, there's 100% of the perps out there, what percentage of people actually wanted to change, who was capable of changing? Because, I mean, once you're wired a certain way, I have a friend who has a going through a problem right now, and basically her soon-to-be ex-husband, he's bipolar. He could be the nicest guy one minute, and then all of a sudden, completely haywire.
Yeah, I would. They're not very good studies on knowing the answer to that question, but my estimate is maybe it's 10%. Like one out of 10 perpetrators recognizes that he has a problem and mm-hmm. wants to change. This is something that in the whole area of domestic violence services is a big question. What is it that will work to help perpetrators, whether they be men or women, change? Because they're into a lot of denial. A lot of them, like you say, are mentally ill, or they are in some way neurotic or some problem that they want to justify their own actions or accuse the victim of being the fault person. So it's very, very difficult. But our group is quite successful. We're having it studied by a university right now because we are, I think, more successful. Now, we do have people who come because they want to change. So that's we're creaming the best mm-hmm. of the perpetrators.
Right.
And secondly, we have a program which shows a lot of respect for them. And also, we invite them in to be kind of the parish family. So, and the men in their evaluation say, I feel like I'm welcomed and respected here. And that is important to help them change.
Well, I watched your interview with Julie Peterson, and I noticed you mentioned one gentleman who ended up murdering his wife. And you said he was a weekly churchgoer. He was a regular, maybe even, was he daily mass?
Yeah.
And very quiet, unassuming guy. And so how do you, for lack of a better term, how do you smoke somebody like that out?
It's very difficult. That man, I never in my life would have guessed was a perpetrator because he was so mild-mannered. And I just met the counselor who counseled the couple that she was murdered at Mercy Hospital in November. And then he killed himself, or I think he was killed by the security people. And this man had counseled that couple that wanted to get married, and he saw that they really weren't ready to get married. But he had no idea that the man would become violent and kill his fiance.
Right.
So, but generally speaking, perpetrators are people who are very insecure. They have a low appreciation for women. They feel very entitled because they're the man, and that gives them the right to do all kinds of things. And
there's a bird in here.
Yeah. And
it's a neat ringtone, Father.
Yeah. So anyway, they do have a little bit of a profile. So that you can, but frequently you can't. Sometimes they're the leading person in the parish, And, it's not uncommon that ministers themselves, I mean, Protestant pastors, rabbis, are abusive to their wives. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they have a role like that in the community doesn't guarantee that they are not going to be involved in this.
Well, I would think the stress level of their job might have something to do with it also. They come back from a hard day at work, whether they're a stock trader or whether they're a local community leader dealing with the school board issues or whatever. They are getting piled on, and they're just looking for a place to release their pent-up frustration. They take it out on their wife or children.
I think the general interpretation is that things like alcohol and stress can aggravate domestic violence, but they're not really the cause, because the cause is a decision to exercise power and control over another person. And it's a pattern of behavior that takes place repeatedly. So, the fact that somebody comes home stressed out one time and just gets really angry doesn't necessarily mean it's domestic violence. And also in marriages where there's differences of opinion and, you know, there's a struggle over whose opinion is going to reign, that's not domestic violence. So it's really a question of power and control, controlling the person. And that can be done in different ways. It can be physical, you know, it could be threats of physical. It can be emotional or verbal. It can be economic or sexual. So, and it can be any combination of those different strategies or ways of exercising power and control.
Well, I have heard the term rape in a marriage, and my thought is, okay, just being ignorant, I've been accused of that, is, well, if you're married, how can it be rape? But obviously, it can be just by the way you described it. So explain a little bit what that entails as okay. far as a rape in a marriage.
Well, absolutely. You know, I think that, you know, traditionally, if you go back 20, 30 years, you know, that at the, your interpretation or your statement was commonly held that a man could have sex anytime he wanted and in any way or shape or form. So now it's much more understood as that this is supposed to be a loving relationship. It's a mutual agreement and union that is supposed to take place. So both parties have to be consenting, respecting one another and in agreement about what is done.
Right.
You know, one of the common things in terms of sexual abuse now, not only is it perhaps on the part of the male demanding sex at any time and with any frequency, but also in the way in which it's happened. And that's been influenced a lot by pornography, which is so rampant
right.
because of the internet. So some men do watch it and then oblige their wives to imitate what they see. And it's pretty disgusting for most women.
Well, and when you think about a marriage in the church, and obviously that's the way we're supposed to do it, but a lot of people rush it. They run into a priest like this friend of mine who happens to have an uncle who's a priest. And he's like, well, let's do the pre-canal. Let's do this. Let's do that. What ended up happening was the husband-to-be's parents suggested they get married ahead of time, you know, ahead of the new year for basically for tax purposes. It was a rush. They had a child already. So she felt obliged to do her best for her child and take care of the child in a family, that the child needed an identity in a family. And she thought it was a good idea, but she didn't really do her due diligence with the husband-to-be. They'd known each other for a little over a year, but the point was a priest, her uncle, was even like, hey, slow down. So a marriage is forever, and you want to make the right choice because you're going to make it before God. And so obviously no priest was involved here. And how many of these situations involve a marriage in the church versus a marriage outside of the church where people get married by a judge or whatever at some, like a hotel or whatever? So
I think, in marriage preparation classes, which the churches, both Protestant and Catholic and even Jewish, everybody tries to prepare the couples. It's not that easy to detect because the perpetrators could be very deceitful, and they could be they know how to be very nice. And then you, on the honeymoon, all of a sudden you realize this isn't the same guy I've been dating, you know? I mean, he can become drunk and abusive, and she would never have seen that. I've had couples like that. So it's not easy to detect. And secondly, you know, when people come to get married, they're usually infatuated, you know?
Right.
It's early on, as you mentioned.
Right.
And so it's hard for them to see any of the signs, the red flags, that what he might actually be like. So he might say things like, well, I don't like you wearing that kind of dress. You know, it's too provocative. Or, you know, I don't really think we ought to be going to your mother's house that much because, you know, she really doesn't like me and I don't feel comfortable there. So she might not see that as signs of his effort to actually control and isolate her.
Once he has the ring on the finger and the paper in hand, it's a different dynamic, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We will be right back with Father Chuck after this break. Stay tuned.
Every parent has a dream of giving their children a great education and great faith. St. Stanislaus Kostka School, a nationally acclaimed Catholic leadership school, has made the dream easier for you to achieve. Here, leadership principles and lessons are an integral part of your child's coursework and school culture. Your child will study foreign languages, such as Mandarin, conduct experiments in real science labs, attend Eucharistic adoration, and more. Don't worry about affording a private education. St. Stanislaus Kostka School offers full tuition scholarships for kindergarten through eighth grade. Send your child to St. Stanislaus Kostka School, located just minutes from downtown Chicago. Dreams can come true, but you need to call today, 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
The Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change. On AM 750, WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
This is Bold Talk with Father Thomas Loyola.
We live in strange times, full of contradictions, many of which we create and then force upon ourselves. An example.
To hear the rest of this and other Bold Talks with Father Thomas Loya, visit taberlife.org and go to the main menu and click subscribe.
We're back. This is Mike Stark sitting in for Father Anthony on listener support, WNDZ. This is the Winds of Change, and I have with me Father Chuck Dom, and we're talking about abuse in a marriage. And before we go any further, Father Chuck, let's talk about how people can come to you to get help. You've spoken at how many churches in the Archdiocese?
140.
140. And how many other dioceses have you visited?
I visited maybe about three or four.
You were just out in San Diego, right?
Yeah.
I bet you wish you were there now. You've got an ice storm coming.
It's gorgeous out there, yeah.
How does somebody go about, seriously, getting to you and getting the help they need? Because this is an urgent issue.
Well, I think it's really important that victims of domestic violence, they may not even know they're victims. They might think, well, I live with a difficult guy or, you know, and I don't know what's going on in this relationship. You know, check it out, because there are many domestic violence agencies in metropolitan Chicago that offer free counseling. So you call them and they will assist you. They'll make an appointment. You know, you can go in and tell what your experience is. And they have, if they think that you need continued counseling, they will provide it, and it's free. And it helps victims clarify in their own minds. Maybe they're feeling kind of helpless. they're feeling, just fearful, whatever. I strongly urge people to get professional counseling. And not all counselors are trained in domestic violence. So just the fact that you have a counselor, a psychologist, or whatever, doesn't mean that that person understands domestic violence. So it's important to go to somebody that is trained in domestic violence. Now, you can access this by, you could go to our website. We have a list of all the domestic violence agencies in metropolitan Chicago. You could even just enter into your computer domestic violence services in Chicago, and the list will come up.
What is your website?
Our website is www.domesticviolenceoutreach.org. So you can go to our website. It has all kinds of resources. It has videos. My homily is up there in Spanish and English. Cardinal Supich's homily is up there. There are these videos that are very educational. There's a manual on how to set up a parish program reaching out to victims of domestic violence. Lots of resources. But you can find out the names of different agencies in Greater Chicago that offer services.
And the website again?
www.domesticviolenceoutreach.org.
So speaking of domestic violence, what is domestic violence?
Well, domestic violence is this pattern of behavior that seeks power and control over another person. And it's not just physical violence. That's the important thing for many people to realize, because actually the most common form of abuse is verbal and emotional. The insults, the constant criticism, the belittling, the foul words, isolation from family and friends, or maybe it's excessive jealousy. So it can be many, it can be intimidation through different ways. So that's the most common form, but it's the most difficult to detect because there are no broken bones or bruises. But many women say it actually hurts more because it's so degrading and belittling and makes them feel terrible. So that's the most common form. But it happens economically. You know, men who won't let their women have any control of money, or maybe they have assets and they've never shared them with their wives, or they've indebted their wives with credit cards, and the wives don't even know it. And, you know, being a spouse, you're co-responsible for the debts of your husband. So there are many forms.
Well, that sounds very familiar. This poor girl has been through a lot of that. She's from here. He moved her out of state, away from everybody, and he stated, you know, quite frankly, I want to get her away from her family because he doesn't care for the family. Because the family is a close, loving family. It's a very good, close, loving family. Heck, they got a priest in the family. They also have a lawyer in the family, but, you know, nobody's perfect. But not a divorce lawyer, unfortunately. But at any rate, the constant put-downs. If I say to you, I'm going to marry you, and I say, I'm going to take care of you, I'm going to be the breadwinner, and you raise the kids, great. But then I don't need to come home and say, what do you do around here? You're lazy, you're useless, you're not providing, you're not a team player. And then when the parents are piling on, you get, you know, or his buddies or whoever are piling on, saying, yeah, you're useless, you don't do anything. Well, that's part of the abuse that this young girl has sustained. And in front of the child, too. Yeah. And when you've got a kid who starts to figure things out, what does that say to the kid? Does that say, well, that's how my mom is treated, so I guess it's a little girl. That must be how I'm supposed to be treated when I find my husband. And it just, it's a chain that just continues to go.
You know, there's been studies done about how this impacts children. And it's something that a lot of people think it's no big deal because the abuse is between the husband and wife. But children experience this. I've had couples thinking, oh, my children don't know about it.
They're asleep.
Yeah, they know about it. They hear it. They can see it. They sense it. So, and it has devastating impacts on people. I mean, I can give a couple of cases. I was just with a deacon in San Diego. He said, I grew up in one of those families. And he said, I had to spend 5 years in therapy to overcome the damage that my father did to me. But it was basically because the way he ruled my mother and us kids. And then I was in Kansas preaching in a parish, and the pastor came to me on Monday night. We're having a beer in the kitchen, and he says, I grew up in this kind of family. It was like a concentration camp. I had to leave the ministry for 6 months to get into therapy because of the way my father had damaged me. So it has damaging effects on children. It's very risky. The studies show that children who grew up in homes with abuse are more likely to drop out of school, abuse drugs and alcohol, and even attempt suicide. It's risky.
You got to hide somewhere, right? You got to cover it up if you can't deal with it. I actually, too, know a priest that said the same thing. He just kind of matter-of-factly said, because I asked him why he chose a vocation. He says, because I love the Lord, I love Mary. But he said, quite honestly, I saw my parents got along, and I didn't want that for myself.
Yeah.
He said, I got to answer to God.
Yeah.
And God's not as hard on me as my father was on my mother.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's working with people as well. But it is something that, but let's get back to the financial abuse and, you know, like locking somebody away out of the house or keeping them from driving or, you know, like you said, putting limits on credit cards or embarrassing them in public by, you know, stopping credit cards. So when the person goes shopping, all of a sudden it's declined and they didn't understand why. And then you get this public humiliation. It might be a minor thing, but I mean, that happens a few times. You start to be gun-shy. You're going to the store like, I want to buy a carton of milk.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the card's good or not. And I'll get you a Uber or here's some money to go shopping, but you know, you can't buy anything extravagant.
Exactly. No, in fact, there's a lot of control that happens economically, particularly in lower income families and immigrant families, where sometimes the woman cannot even go shopping on her own. He has to go and with her because he doesn't trust her out there on her own. Or he wants to see the receipt and he wants all the change. And then he says, well, why did you buy that? There's cheaper stuff. Or we don't need that. So there's constant harassment about money. But I think in higher income people, it's really impoverishing the spouse. You know, where she doesn't have access to anything. And even though, if there were a divorce, that she's entitled to half of the resources of the family. I mean, I've known men who have managed to isolate all that legally. So when there is a divorce, she's without anything.
She can't get money to pay her divorce attorney. That's happening right now, as a matter of fact.
It's one of the major problems is that after the separation, and men who abuse their wives frequently continue to abuse them through the divorce court. They impoverish them.
How does one go about getting a good attorney to represent them with the requirement that most divorce attorneys are going to ask for $3,500 to $5,000 as a retainer to get started on a case like this? I mean, good ones.
Yeah.
Then he's forcing you to use some less than desirable attorney that'll take anything, maybe a high volume guy or something like that, that's not going to represent you well, that doesn't know what's best for the person, is just looking for money because I'm like, all right, I'll take you, you know, but, you know, I need this, you know, this money and, you know, you sign your life away and you don't know if this guy's going to represent you or, more importantly, your child's best interest because they're looking for, you know, their rear end, not anybody else's.
Well, absolutely. And it's not easy to find a divorce lawyer that's going to help you if you don't have very much money. So that's now most of the agencies that work with victims of domestic violence have connections with lawyers where they make their referrals. So it's best to get into a contact with one of the domestic violence agencies and ask them for legal help.
So there is hope.
There is hope.
Very good.
Well, most of the agencies that publicly say, like, you know, the Legal Assistance Foundation and so forth, that give legal assistance free, they're so booked up.
Right.
You know, so it's hard to get in.
Right. And if you've got a case like an emergency order of protection or something like that, you need to get on it right away.
Exactly.
If you default, boom, that all automatically kicks in for the next 2 years in some cases. So there's a lot of loopholes.
And, you know, another interesting thing that a lot of people don't know is that when the divorce is in process and there's discussion of custody, which is now called shared time for the child.
Mm-hmm.
It's often that the abuser or the perpetrator gets more time than the victim because he can show that he has more money.
Right.
And he is going to be able to so-called take care of the children better.
Even if it's a girl and a mom?
But yes, because the court, family court, does not take into consideration domestic violence. It's domestic violence is considered to be something that happens between the parents that doesn't affect the children. So the family court looks at what is best for the children, and they don't take into consideration the relationship or the abuse between the parents. It's crazy.
When are they going to get this right?
I'll tell you, there is no major movement to change family court, but it is one of the areas where victims are re-victimized by the court. I've had cases, numerous cases, where women are just abused by the family court because they will not look at the abuse that she's experiencing from her husband and the father of the children, and will not take into consideration that that will affect the children as well.
And we need to elect politicians that are willing to put this on their,
absolutely,
on their platform for sure. All right, we are going to take another break. I will be back with Father Chuck after this commercial break. Stay tuned.
Every parent has a dream of giving their children a great education and great faith. St. Stanislaus Kostka School, a nationally acclaimed Catholic leadership school, has made the dream easier for you to achieve. Here, leadership principles and lessons are an integral part of your child's coursework and school culture. Your child will study foreign languages, such as Mandarin, conduct experiments in real science labs, attend Eucharistic adoration, and more. Don't worry about affording a private education. St. Stanislaus Kostka School offers full tuition scholarships for kindergarten through eighth grade. Send your child to St. Stanislaus Kostka School, located just minutes from downtown Chicago. Dreams can come true, but you need to call today, 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the divine mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
Is it getting better? Or do you feel the same? Will it make it easier on you now? You got someone to blame. Thank you.
drag the past out into the light. We're one, but we're not the same. We get to carry each other, carry each other. Whoa.
Alrighty then, we're back. And this is Mike Stark sitting in for Father Anthony. And I have with me Father Chuck Dom, and we're having what I feel is a very intense, enjoyable, but intense discussion, because what we're talking about affects so many people, and a lot of people are obviously afraid to step forward. Maybe they're too proud, if they come from a wealthy family, to reach out for this help. They don't want to admit that they've been just humiliated financially by their husband. There's a lot to this. So you're a priest, obviously, and I guess the question is, why is the church getting involved, and how are they getting involved?
Well, I think the church is involved with this primarily because we're trying to do the work of Jesus Christ. So Jesus Christ reached out to everybody who was hurting in particular, whether they be paralytics or lepers, whether they be women or children, people who were foreigners. Christ showed us how to be compassionate. So that's what we are about. We're trying to reach out to those who are suffering abuse in their own relationships. I always say to people, if you can imagine Jesus walking down the street one day and coming across a woman with a black eye and her arm is in a sling, what do you think Jesus would say to her? I mean, he wouldn't say, you got to go back to him and work it out. He would say, come with me and I will help you be safe. And that's what I think the church has to do. We have to reach out so that everybody who's in an abusive situation knows, I can go to my church because there they will help me. There they will understand. There the compassion of Jesus is going to be available for me.
But wait a minute, I got married in a church and I made a vow before God, so this is supposed to be for better or for worse. How can I come to a church and have you support my divorce? Why?
Well, I think we have to understand that the position of the church about the permanency of and dissolubility of marriage is based on an ideal that this is what we're supposed to approach or live. But in fact, in many instances, we are not able to achieve that for one or other reasons. I always say, you know, people will get married, and the church recognizes that sometimes those marriages are not valid. For example, somebody felt like they were being forced into the marriage. Maybe it was a shotgun marriage where she got pregnant and her father said, you got to get married. Well, that's a marriage where there's no freedom. And so the church says it's not valid. Or let's say he says, I love you very much, and you're my only love, and I'll be with you forever and be faithful to you. And then he's unfaithful in a very short period of time, showing that he was not sincere. So those are grounds for an annulment because the church recognizes it wasn't valid.
As is a prenup.
Yeah. So the same thing would happen if I say, I'm going to honor you and love you all the days of my life, and then all of a sudden I start abusing you, whether it's verbally, economically, or physically, I start abusing you very shortly after the marriage. Well, that shows that I was not sincere in honoring you. The church will say that is not a valid marriage. So the church recognizes that not every marriage that takes place in the Catholic Church is a valid marriage. We have to see whether or not that ideal is actually being lived.
So you people that are listening right now need to realize that the church is a place you can go for help. Like I said, I would think, oh boy, you know, I don't want to see Father and tell him that I want a divorce and, you know, get into all this stuff because I got married in a church. Because I think people are looking at the old Catholic Church values, and as it becomes, you know, a 50-50 crapshoot on getting married these days, and you just said it, the church realizes that not all are valid. So it is okay to go to your pastor or to a priest and say, hey, I've got issues. He may not suggest you get divorced right away, but, you know, there is counseling. But at a certain point, the priest may just say, hey, look, the Lord has other plans for you. let's let the Lord do with you what happens.
I think it's important that we all recognize that we are in a process where we're becoming more aware of the existence of domestic violence and how to respond to it. I mean, traditionally, if there was a problem in a marriage, it was, what did she do wrong? Why isn't she pleasing him? So the woman was commonly blamed for any problem in the marriage. Well, that's not happening today, largely because of the women's movement and people beginning to recognize that women are of equal status as men and that the marriage has to reflect that. That's something relatively new. Now, the Catholic Church wrote a beautiful pastoral letter about this in 1992, which was early on. The first funding for domestic violence services in the United States from the federal government didn't happen until 1996. So there wasn't much, and there was no shelter for victims of domestic violence in the United States before 1975. So, you know, this is a process. We're becoming more and more aware of it. And I know there are priests today who might still say to a victim who comes to him, you know, you have to go back and work it out because he doesn't understand. He's never been trained. And that's unfortunate. And that's one of the things we're working on, getting out to the seminarians and priests and deacons to tell them the church's teaching came in 1992 in a very explicit and clear way. It's in a document called When I Call for Help. You can find that on the internet. Just put in When I Call for Help. In the first paragraph, the bishops say, we have to state as strongly and clearly as we can that violence against women inside or outside the home is never justified, and it is a sin and often a crime. And then they conclude the letter by saying, we emphasize that no one is expected to stay in an abusive marriage. Those are words of liberation for many women and some men. No one is expected to stay in an abusive marriage. That's the position of the Catholic Church, and many people don't know it. When I get up in a church and I preach, near the end of my homily, I say, you know, the church has been a little complicit because we haven't spoken about this. I said, how many of you have ever heard a sermon about domestic violence? Raise your hand. Almost no one raises their hand because we've not talked about it. We've got the position since 1992, beautiful statement, but many clergy don't know about it, so we're not talking about it. So one of the things that I'm doing as the director of domestic violence for the Archdiocese of Chicago, as I'm going out to every single church I can find, and I'm preaching at all the masses on a weekend and then forming a ministry right there, and now saying, we have to get the word out so people can feel I'm going to my church because there they understand.
I think it's wonderful that you're doing this. I would like to, again, extend to everybody out there, if you're involved in a parish that hasn't had Father Chuck come, how would somebody go about getting you to come preach at their church?
Well, you can access me through our website, which I gave before, www.domesticvioleanceoutreach.org, or you can call me. If you want to take down my number, it's my cell phone number. I'm always available, 312-371-7752. So I'll repeat that. 312-371-7752.
And we will come back after this break and discuss more about you and what got you involved in this ministry and where you see it going, because it's a very important ministry. And I, again, thank you for being here. We'll be right back.
Every parent has a dream of giving their children a great education and great faith. St. Stanislaus Kostka School, a nationally acclaimed Catholic leadership school, has made the dream easier for you to achieve. Here, leadership principles and lessons are an integral part of your child's coursework and school culture. Your child will study foreign languages, such as Mandarin, conduct experiments in real science labs, attend Eucharistic adoration, and more. Don't worry about affording a private education. St. Stanislaus Kostka School offers full tuition scholarships for kindergarten through eighth grade. Send your child to St. Stanislaus Kostka School, located just minutes from downtown Chicago. Dreams can come true, but you need to call today, 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Floors as low.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
You've got your radio turned on to Winds of Change, where you can hear about your faith and hear about today's culture through the lens of Christ's teachings with Father Anthony Bush and others. Monday through Friday at noon on AM 750. Keep Winds of Change on by going to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to donate. And Winds of Change offers thanks for your donation.
Well, I just heard the news today. It seems my life is gonna change. I close my eyes, begin to pray, then tears of joy stream down my face.
Okay, we're back. I'm with Father Chuck, and we've had quite the show. I wish we had more time. Obviously, we've got some time left, and with that, we're going to get a little bit more involved into what your ministry is all about. You've been, you're 81 years old, and you look like you're 60.
Thank you. You
must be happy in your work.
I am.
And you're dealing with helping people regain their dignity in their lives and helping families rebuild lives. You obviously were a pastor for a long time, and then you kind of segued into this. You've been doing this for how long now?
Well, I started doing it part-time in 2007, and then I started doing it full-time maybe about 4 years, 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I look for a new church every weekend is what I do now. And then I have a whole network. So basically what I do when I go to a church is I preach at every mass about domestic violence, and it's very well received. I was at St. Clement's this past weekend. People come up to me. That was one of the best sermons you ever heard. That was phenomenal. We needed to hear this. I wish my mother had heard it years ago. She needed it. So I get a very positive response from the congregations. And in my homily, I invite people who are interested in working on this or wanted to learn more about it, or maybe they know somebody who needs some help, to come to a meeting the very next night, Monday night. And I usually get anywhere between maybe 15 and 30 people who will come. And, you know, some they come for different reasons. And I always ask them why they came. And there's where you hear, well, I grew up in this kind of family, or my sister's in it, or we have a daughter now going through this, or I have a friend. So you see that it's pretty common. One thing we haven't talked about is the prevalence of domestic violence.
I was going to ask you what percentage of people are involved.
The Center for Disease Control says that a woman is battered in this country every 6 seconds. It also says that one out of every three women at some point in her life will be either hit or sexually assaulted by her spouse or partner. And that's incredible. It's hard to believe. Like one out of three. So I always tell priests, when you're standing up there and you're looking out at the congregation, and let's say there's 400 people at your Mass, maybe 50 of them are children, 100 are men, 150 are men, you still have 200 women there. There's a lot of women there that have had experience or are having experience of domestic violence right now. So you are speaking to people who understand it. So it is a much bigger problem. And one of the things that's interesting to know is that it happens in every community. It's not just isolated in certain communities. The studies show that it happens at practically at the same rate. So if you're in Lincoln Park, or if you're in Pilsen, or if you're in Englewood, or if you live in the suburbs, it's there. And I always tell people, ask your local police, what's the number one most frequent 911 call they receive? And they're going to tell you it's domestic violence, because it is in every police district. It is the number one call that police receive.
I'm usually a big talker. I talk a lot. And, I mean, I'm just dumbfounded with what you did. I mean, I don't even know what to say that it's that
Well, what
prevalent.
We try to do.
And this is somebody you chose to share your life with. Not some, you know, punk boyfriend in a bar, but somebody you actually said, all right, we're going to get married.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's very frustrating. It's very discouraging, saddening. Yeah, it's tragic. But one of the things we try to do in the parishes is we try to raise awareness about the problem, because it hasn't been talked about. Most people do not think their church is going to do anything about this. So we want to change that. We want to get people to understand, you have a problem, you can go to your church. That's what you want. Because we want to be that compassionate image and reality of Jesus Christ. Secondly, we want to connect people to services. We can't expect every church to have the resources to be able to respond to with counseling and so forth. But they have to be able to know where the resources are and refer people to them. So in their parish bulletin, you know, they have to have the information all the time. And they should be mentioning things at least every month. They should have a prayer of the faithful, some prayer for victims or the perpetrators or children or something.
Who's the saint of victims in domestic battery, would you say?
Well, there are a couple. One is Saint Rita. She's because she was a victim. And so she's been selected kind of as the major one. We don't know an awful lot about her, but we do understand that she was a victim. And then finally, the third thing that we try to do is work on prevention. And this is more difficult because we want to get to young people. We want to get to kids. We want to get to people who are going to get married, you know, to tell them what to look out for. And the Center for Disease Control is going to be coming out with a new curriculum, which they've been working on for like 8 years for sixth and seventh graders, because they think that it's more important to get to children when they're young, when they're forming their first ideas of how to relate to the opposite sex or gender. Right. They have to know what is a healthy relationship, how to recognize it, and how to recognize an unhealthy relationship. You know, a bullying, all the talk about bullying has been helpful, because actually that's what goes on in domestic violence,
right,
is bullying. But it's bigger than the bullying that you would normally see in the school or among young people. It's all about how you don't insult people, how you respect people, how you can develop a positive relationship with those people. So helping kids understand that and then recognize when it doesn't happen, how to respond to it. Now, that's going to take some time, because we'd love to get it into all the Catholic schools, all the confirmation programs, all the youth groups, but that's going to take some time.
Well, maybe somebody like Steubenville can take this ball and run with it, since they seem to have the premium, at least Catholic program for young people in the country.
And young people's programs should all have this as part of it. It's sometimes. But you know, most pre-CANA programs in the United States do not. They have stuff in their teaching in their premarital program about conflict resolution, okay? But conflict resolution isn't domestic violence. I mean, generally it's about differences of opinion and how are you going to make decisions and so forth.
Right.
But it's not power and control. That's the important thing.
Well, you mentioned something that kind of threw me. Center for Disease Control is leading this, which could be misleading to a lot of people. Like, I wouldn't, like, if I was in an abusive relationship, I wouldn't go for disease control. Why is it in their jurisdiction and not, why isn't there just relationship abuse or category?
Yeah, the Centers for Disease Control is a federally funded institution that studies diseases. So it would study Ebola and all these, you know, the flu and everything like that. And they consider violence to be a health issue. So they have a lot of resources about how to handle violence, how to respond to violence.
It is a disease. It's a mental disease, right? I mean, the person that's perpetrating it is mentally, there's something wrong with them. And the person that's getting abused probably has a propensity to develop some sort of
condition as well. A lot of people walk into it kind of blindly and they feel trapped. You know, it's not, they didn't see it. He was very deceptive and didn't reveal his hand. You know, we talk about children who are sexually abused, that frequently they're groomed, we say. They are prepared for this, you know, so that when that actually happens, they're already so tied to the abuser that they won't denounce him and so forth. So the same thing happens with victims of domestic violence. A lot of times they are groomed, you know, like, you know, things come on gradually so that the victims don't recognize that they're being prepared for maybe total isolation, total subjugation, which didn't happen. Like, a guy doesn't come home at night and say, you know, from now on, I don't want you to have any contact with anybody. No, he's not going to do that.
We're moving to Cleveland.
Yeah, that's right.
Which would be terrible.
Yeah, you don't know anybody in Cleveland. That's isolation, yeah.
Well, we've only got about a minute left, so I'd like you to leave us with some words of wisdom and, again, top it off by telling people to contact you. I cannot stress enough how important what you're doing is in my mind, knowing somebody that's gone through this and having a young daughter myself that, you know, someday is going to be married, and I don't want her to be one of those three.
That's
looking
right
back at you. What are your final parting words of wisdom, if you would, Father Chuck?
Well, I think we should, first of all, try to get our churches, all of our churches involved in this. So if you participate in a parish where this isn't happening, go to your pastor, say you heard this program, and say to him, you know, I'd like you to contact Father Chuck Dom and have that in our parish. So that's one thing. Another thing is, I think, respond to victims. If anybody you know or suspect is a victim of domestic violence, reach out to them and express your concern. You don't have to interfere in their lives, but you can say, I'm concerned about you because I noticed this, that, or the other thing about it, and it doesn't seem well. Are you okay? And if you're not, I want to be here to help you. And then, you know, finally, make sure you go to our website and take a look, you know, www.domesticviolenceoutreach.org. And if people want to contact me, it's 312-371-7752.
Wonderful. Thank you, Father Chuck. We'll see you guys on Thursday. Have a wonderful rest of the week. God bless you.
We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed. What's the truth?